Hi everyone, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks for joining in. And just for a change of pace, and instead of waiting till the end of the video with all the information panels, just want to remind you, if you can, if you're able to, a dollar a month on Patreon or a donation to, what is it, paypal.me/SifuSylvain. That's a direct donation to me and the school. Any way that you can contribute, you know I'm not monetized on YouTube, don't meet the algorithms, so you're my only means of support. And whatever I can scrape together on my own keeps this little simple podcast going. But I believe it's really important, and most importantly, to support you in your practice, especially in this time of COVID. And you know what? It's not just COVID that keeps us in our homes. The world seems to be getting more and more unstable. But this is the latter day of the law. So Buddhists, we saw this coming, right? It's not that different than samurai days in 13th century Japan, right? So a lot of what Nichiren talks about is very easily relatable to what we're going through in our daily lives. Anyway, suffice it to say that we have a lot of reasons and a lot of impetus and a lot of motivations to practice our Buddhist chanting and awaken our Gohonzon so that we can reduce, limit, and push away a lot of things that could negatively affect us, our emotions, our lives, our state of mind, our life condition, right? We want to raise it as much as we can. So what do you think of this Go Show so far? Part one, part two, and part three have been pretty meaty. And this is the third book. I have six books of all of the Go Shows. Some of which are contested, but I'll point that out when it's appropriate. But suffice it to say, there's a tremendous amount of scholarship and information in all of these Go Show. But in book three, I've assembled a lot of kind of core Go Shows, a lot of them being communications from Nichiren to his inner circle. So he's less obtuse, less flowery, if you will, about the concepts, and he kind of nails them down more narrowly. And I think usually beginners, you don't read these right away. They're not pushed into the forefront. But I'm conflicted about that, because as I read them, especially this one, but you know, the last few Gosho have been about the Gohonzon and how it's constructed, what it means. Now we're talking about the entity of the entire teachings, the core of the Lotus Sutra, the core of the Buddhist method. It's all being covered in this Gosho. It's pretty heady stuff. But in a way, I wish I'd have read these when I began, first off in my practice, some 40 or so years ago. I would have seen right away I would have gained a lot of insight. I'm an artist, and I'm also very attracted to the maths and sciences, specifically sciences, chemistry, not so much biology. I'm attracted to it, but I don't have a facility for it. Chemistry is really easy for me. Particle physics and quantum theory, those are the areas I like to travel in. And as I study Buddhism, I easily connect the two in my mind, and it deepens my insight and my personal understanding. We're all different, though. You may abhor science, and you may like, I don't know, horticulture, gardening, maybe pets, maybe husbandry, maybe farming. But I have a feeling that whatever you endeavor to do in your human daily life, as you study Buddhism, you will find tremendous insight and these aha moments. Reading about something that at first may seem a little convoluted and difficult to understand, but as soon as you can latch on to something, oh, that's like this.
Oh,
I get it. And those moments are precious because that's what keeps you engaged. And if there's one overriding reason why I do these videos is because they keep me engaged, they keep me studying, and my hope, my sincere wish is that in some way, they provide you with the same kind of intrigue and excitement and questioning. And I mean, we're human beings. We love to solve puzzles. We like to put things in compartments. That's a skill that we have, and it's also the thing that keeps us on this precipice of suffering. And this is what Buddhism addresses particularly, is our. See that when we do that, when we categorize things and put things in compartments and put them in order of some sort, that's the nature of attachment. We like to nail things down, don't we? in everything from our daily habits to our relationships and what have you. So, oh, let me, maybe you'll hear me a little better now. I've got the microphone pointed at me instead of the wall. Sorry about that. Okay. Not a sponsor, by the way. YouTube, crazy place. So we're going to continue with the entity of Myoho Renge Kyo, or the entity of the wonderful and difficult to understand law. Or the entity of Daimoku, or the entity of the Buddhist method to awaken our Buddha nature, our Buddha mind, which is already there, simply needs to uncloud the path from our attachments and our categorizations to our enlightenment. Now that I've said that, you might have noticed that there's a built-in obstacle there, isn't there? Because as we, I don't know what's going on in my throat, but hopefully it'll go away. As I just explained, we are categorizers, right? We like to put things in neat little packets. And so we can say, that's what that is, that's what that is, that's not this, this is not that, da 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 da, right? Well, we tend to do that when we start to practice Buddhism. And so we like to read things and we like to say, ah, so this is that. And so when they say this, then that's what that is, because I know that word, or I know that word, or I understand this idea. I hate to burst your bubble, but although that's necessary for us human beings in order to glean meaning, keep your eye on the meaning. And not so much on the little moments of, I understand those words and that's like this, because that's the game of attachment and that's just slowing your progress. So, same thing happens. I get questions all the time. How do I chant to my mandala? How do I unearth my own extant Gohonzon through chanting at this mandala? Which is not Gohonzon, but it's a representation of Gohonzon. Gohonzon is your Buddhahood. It's in you. It's your process. Life is a process. You can't point to it and say, that's life. You can point to something like a flower and say, that's precipitated by the process that is life. But it isn't in itself life, it's simply evidence of it. You follow? So, when we chant to Gohonzon, or in truthfully to this mandala representation of Gohonzon, that's the mindset we have to have. We have to look at this mirror like you would in the morning when you go into the bathroom and you look at the mirror, or whatever time of day you do it, and you're looking for pimples or blemishes or the hair that keeps getting in your eye, or if you need to shave like I do. Whatever. When you use a mirror, typically you don't just stand in front of the mirror admiring yourself. Even if you do, what you're admiring are attributes, right? So when we chant the Gohonzon, we have to unglue our minds from trying to categorize that's enlightenment, I'm chanting at it or to it, and it's going to do something for me. All of that is attachment, and it's unreasonable. It's not Buddhism. But that's wonderful, yet difficult to understand. The idea here that's being a bit of a deep dive in this Gosho is that it is the action taken with the commitment, the mental attitude, right? Remember, resolve and conviction. Well, resolve and conviction in what? In that mandala? In the Gohanzon? If you understand Gohanzon to be this enlightened Buddha wisdom path of your own enlightenment, then yes. But I would rather, because it's confusing, that you thought of this as tools to help you realize something profoundly deep within your own life experience, your own process of life, the process of life being specifically within your experience of it, and awaken it. You want to your Buddhahood to blossom in your very human mind. You want to use this tool. You want to demand of this tool. You want to chant to this Gohanzon with the determination that you will realize to make obvious, to make experienced, realize your own Buddha. With that kind of commitment, when you make that kind of commitment, it's like it narrows your focus. You stop, your peripheral vision doesn't catch everything that's going on over here, because now you're looking right at Myoho, and you're looking right at it, and you're saying, I want my Buddhahood, not my MTV. That's old. I'm showing my age. My Buddhahood. I want my Buddhahood. I want to know it, see it, feel it right now. That kind of ichinen, that kind of volition, that kind of resolve. I will, I am there. That's how we chant to Gohanzon. I know you've heard, well, take it to Gohanzon, earthly desires are enlightenment. Yes, those are all skillful means, expedient devices, just to get you to plop your butt in front of Gohanzon and chant. Because sooner or later, if you're determined, it will occur. And once it occurs, you'll know it, and you'll want it again, and you'll want it more and more. But I'm telling you, if you want to skip all of that and just understand, especially if you've been chanting for a while and you've had benefits, but now you're not so sure, or you've been chanting, or you've been studying Buddhism for years, and you're hitting a lull, and you're saying, I don't know, I know I've changed, but has my life really changed that much? I still have grief, and I still this and that. Especially you. When you go to Gohanzon, don't go wishing for new chickens or a nice shiny car or relationships. That's very, very beginner level kind of thinking. And I would argue that's a misunderstanding and a miseducation of Buddhism, although many organizations use it to entice membership, because organizations are about organizations, not their members. And you know, enough of that rant. I've done that enough times. My point is, if you're having doubts, if you're struggling with your practice, whatever your level of practice, go to that mandala that you have set up in an altar. Open it with deep respect, with the commitment, as you're lighting the candles, as you're lighting the incense, before you even look up at Gohanzon or at your mandala. I'm going to keep correcting myself here. Have it in your mind, okay, we're going to do this today. I'm going to get what I want. With that kind of ichinen. And then chant until you can't. Chant until you can't. And you will feel it. You will feel it in your gut, in your toes. You will get there. All right. So, with all of that, blah, 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 let's get back into the Gosho. So Nitrin continues with the question and answer format. And now a really interesting question is asked. One that I'm sure all of you will find interesting at some level. During the Thus Come One's lifetimes. Now this is an indication of Shakyamuni Buddha, right? During the Thus Come One's lifetime, who was able to realize the lotus of the entity of the law? Right? So far we've distinguished that there is a lotus, because it's a metaphor, there is a lotus of the beginner. There is a lotus of the intermediate. There is a lotus of the advanced. There is a lotus of the bodhisattva. And there is a lotus of the Buddha. So what is that about? The lotus, the renge, the acting as two we've been talking about, both as metaphor and as the law itself, right? It's easy to get that confused, but understand that the renge, the lotus, is the experiential level. So who during the time of Shakyamuni, since he taught for over 50 years, and his teachings progressed from early to more advanced to finally bodhisattva, was any one of those able to attain this lotus of Buddha that you're talking about, the entity of the law? So the answer may sound a little confusing, but keep in mind, all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in these treatises are emanations of Shakyamuni. He says so himself. So Shakyamuni has realized Buddhahood. Therefore, the people call him Buddha. But in actuality, Buddha is what he realized, not he himself, human. But people keep that misconception all the way through. And even halfway through the Lotus Sutra, it's not until the 15th chapter of the Lotus Sutra that he goes, by the way, I didn't attain Buddhahood. In other words, I didn't become Buddha enlightened while I was here sitting under the Bodhi tree and awoke. This Buddhahood that I founded, that I found, that I experienced, has been here all along. It is the process of life itself, manifest through our human consciousness. Without human consciousness, there is no Buddhahood, because Buddhahood is the awakening. And the awakening allows us to understand, see, appreciate, and be awed by this process of life that's going on, of which we humans are a part. So do you see, the Buddhahood in one fell swoop is not only something not other and not discovered, but something revealed, of which we already are a part and parcel of this process. So this is why Buddhahood is innate, inherent, pick your word, built in. That built-inness is Gohanzan. To perceive that Gohanzan with our human mind is the work of Buddhist method to gain the insight to perceive it. That insight to perceive it is what? Buddha wisdom. See, start rounding out your definition of what all these wonderful little terms that are floating around actually mean. So you could say, by study and chanting, we are developing our resolve and developing our Buddha wisdom. Right? You cannot get down the road without a first step. Many steps get you further down the road. You experience more of the road and you remember the way to get to where you're going. Once you achieve it, it's obvious. You're there. Okay? So, answer. During the period of the four flavors and three teachings that preceded the Lotus Sutra, there were persons of the three vehicles, the five vehicles, the seven expedient means, and the nine worlds, and the bodhisattvas of the provisional perfect teaching, as well as the Buddha of this teaching. So he's just pointing out all the different levels of attainment of the studies of what? Buddha wisdom, right? Places along the path. But with the exception of the Buddha of the lifespan chapter, that's the 16th chapter of the Lotus Sutra that we recite in the second part of Gangyo, of the essential teaching, no longer provisional, neither any of these persons nor the Buddha of the theoretical teaching had so much as heard the name of the lotus of the entity expounded in the essential teaching, much less realized it. So though those early teachers or students of Buddhism and those early teachings facilitated people along the path of Buddha wisdom, it was a lot of hand-holding to get people to start walking and then walk further and then walk further until they could understand what the walking further meant to them. Capacity grew, right, over time, until a certain group were so capable that he could then preach the Lotus Sutra. But he knew full well when he did that many, if not most, of the people that were following him in his day wouldn't fully understand what he was talking about. That this would come much later on. And this is where you get the former, the middle, and the latter day of the law. This is Shakyamuni saying it's going to take a couple thousand years before people naturally have the capacity to pick up on this and get it. He knew he was speaking that far ahead, but he also knew some people would get it during his day. And so how could he not, right? He had to document his teaching, and not by writing down, but by verbal recitation for memorization, because this is the way to ensure that a teaching will get handed down, right? At least it was in his day. During the first 40 and more years of his teaching life, Nichiren continues, the Buddha did not make clear the doctrine of the lotus of unsurpassed enlightenment that reveals the replacement of the three vehicles with the one vehicle. That is why the Immeasurable Meaning Sutra says, quote, they will in the end fail to gain unsurpassed enlightenment, end quote, by which it means that the lotus of the replacement of the three vehicles with the one vehicle, which the Buddha revealed in the theoretical teaching, was never expounded in the period before the preaching of the Lotus Sutra. Much less then did he reveal the lotus of the entity, that of, quote, opening the near and revealing the distant, of the true identity that is difficult to conceive, of the fusion of reality and wisdom, and of originally inherent and not created, end quote. How could Maitreya and the others, who were taught and converted by the Buddha in his transient status, have had any understanding of such things? So again, he's talking about this was an enlightened man teaching these people, but he didn't reveal the ultimate method of attaining enlightenment. So although he had very dedicated students, because he hadn't given them the essential teaching yet, their achievement was in following him and learning along the way. It wasn't in actual realization of their Buddhahood, their Buddha-ness. In a way, that's kind of sad, but Nichiren then states another question. Obviously, you probably have some just from hearing that. How do we know that the Bodhisattvas of the Perfect Teaching expounded before the Lotus Sutra, or the Bodhisattvas of the Perfect Teaching set forth in the theoretical teaching of the Lotus Sutra, were not enlightened to the lotus of the entity of the essential teaching? Yeah. Just because he hasn't taught it yet doesn't mean people weren't capable of getting it on their own, right? That's the question. Answer. The Bodhisattvas of the Perfect Teaching expounded before the Lotus Sutra did not understand the lotus of the theoretical teaching of the Lotus Sutra, and the Bodhisattvas of the Perfect Teaching set forth in the theoretical teaching did not understand the lotus of the essential teaching. Tendai says, quote, even successors of the Buddha of the provisional teachings do not know people who have received instruction from the Buddha of the theoretical teaching. And people taught by that Buddha do not know people who have received instruction from the Buddha of the essential teaching. End quote. The great teacher Dengyo explains, quote, this is a direct way, but it is not the great direct way. He also says, quote, because they have not yet understood the great direct way to enlightenment, end quote, the point being made in these passages is clear. So, in English, before you get taught calculus, you may understand well the uses of algebra. You may be a whiz at algebra. But your teacher, and what that teacher means to you, the teaching itself, does not expose you to calculus. Not yet. Maybe ephemerally, but not truly, intimately, exactly. So the teacher, though it may be the same teacher that later in the day does teach calculus, is not the teacher of calculus when the teacher is teaching you algebra. It's that simple. So the Buddha of the provisional teachings is not the Buddha of the essential teachings. It's not a different person. It's a different entity. And this is a good point to reiterate. Entity is not a specific thing. It's a conceptual thing. So like I just said, the teacher could be teaching basic math in the morning, geometry in the afternoon, algebra in the late afternoon, and calculus in the evening. Same guy, same entity of teaching, but a different teacher in each of those classes. Or there could be five different teachers for each level of mathematics. But they are all teacher, entity teacher, entity of teaching. So when we talk about the entity of Myoho Renge Kyo, once again, we're not talking about the characters, the letters, the sounds. We're talking about the process, the vehicle for intonation, invoking that which it represents. So we have a label for it. I heard, I was thinking about this this morning. I used to follow a musician, artist, named Laurie Anderson. She does interesting conceptual videos and music and so forth. I heard her say one day that there's the thing and there's the name for the thing. And to a Buddhist, that's one thing too many. And I thought that was an interesting way to say it, because it very much obviates the duality that human beings live in. We have our human mind that's full of attachments, cravings, right? Categorizations, names, like in the Nidana, name and form, name and form. Name follows form. Form does not follow name. Form is form. It's formed. But what is it formed of? We don't have a name for that. Well, now we do. It's Myoho Renge Kyo. We have a name for the energy that enters into formation, not the formations. We have a word for that. It's formations. But pre-formation, what's that? It's not pre-formation. What is it? It's Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. It's Myoho Renge Kyo. It's the lotus of Buddhahood. Follow? I'm going to keep hammering at this in as many ways as I can conjure because it's a slippery one. I get it. All right. Continuing with Nichiren, the bodhisattvas of the teachings preached before the Lotus Sutra or of the theoretical teaching have, in a certain sense, eradicated delusion and gained understanding of truth. Nevertheless, in the light of the essential teaching, they have gained only a temporary cutting off of delusion, not the kind that extends beyond a certain dimension. Therefore, it is said that they have in fact not yet cut off delusion. Thus, although it is said that the bodhisattvas had already gained entrance to enlightenment through the various sutras, the term, quote, gained entrance, end quote, is simply applied here in a temporary manner as a means of disparaging the achievement of the people of the two vehicles. Therefore, even the great bodhisattvas of the pre-Lotus Sutra's teachings and the theoretical teaching arrive at the realization of the lotus of the Buddha only when they are exposed to the essential teaching and achieve a true cutting off of delusion only when they hear the teachings of the lifespan chapter, whose titles begins with Myoho Renge Kyo. Just a little reminder. He goes on. The great teacher Tendai, commenting on this passage in the Emerging from the Earth chapter, in which a period of time measuring 50 small kappas is, through the thus come one's supernatural power, made to seem to the members of the assembly as though it were no more than half a day, says, quote, to the awakened ones, what seemed like a short period of time was understood to be a long one lasting 50 small kappas. But to those who were still deluded, the long period seemed to be as short as half a day. Miao Lo, in turn, explains this comment by saying, quote, the bodhisattvas have already freed themselves from ignorance, and so they are referred to here as the awakened ones. The ordinary beings of the assembly, however, have not yet advanced beyond the rank of worthy persons, and thus they are referred to as the deluded ones. In other words, they're dedicated students, but they're not awakened to the ultimate Buddha wisdom. moving on, the meaning of these passages is quite clear. It indicates that the bodhisattvas of the pre-Lotus Sutra teachings and of the theoretical teaching were in fact still deluded, and only the bodhisattvas of the earth were worthy of being called awakened ones. That's you and me. Nevertheless, at the present time, there are certain persons of the Tendai school who, when they discuss the essential teaching and the theoretical teaching, declare that there is no difference between the two. And in interpreting the passages under discussion, they assert that the people taught and converted by the Buddha in his transient status are to be included in the category of awakened ones. So obviously they're competing definitions of what the chapters of the Lotus Sutra are saying. That's what this is about. This is a gross error of interpretation, since the meaning of the sutra passage and the annotations regarding it is perfectly clear. I do not see how anyone could put forward such an unreasonable assertion. So this is Nichiren clearing up misconceptions from other teachers, sects, schools, misinterpreting the information in the Lotus Sutra. He goes on. If we examine the passage in the, quote, Emerging from the Earth chapter, end quote, we see that it states that the bodhisattvas of the earth praise the thus come one for a period of 50 small kalpas, but to the members of the assembly on Eagle Peak, who had been taught by the Buddha in his transient status, this seemed like no more than half a day. Tendai, in his explanation, introduces the terms awakened ones and deluded ones. He explains that because the assembly members who had been taught by the Buddha in his transient status were deluded ones, they accordingly believed that the interval of time was no more than half a day, though it was a mistaken interpretation of the facts. The bodhisattvas of the earth, on the other hand, were the awakened ones, and they therefore viewed the interval of time as being 50 small kalpas in duration, which was the correct interpretation of the facts. So this is, again, this is some of that circular reasoning, but this is dissecting the I don't want to say grammar, the form of teaching, the form of the expedient means in the Lotus Sutra itself, explaining that those who have been accepting the teachings of the earlier teacher in the day, the Buddha of those teachings, although they were learning and laudable, were still deluded because they hadn't been shown the ultimate way of not being deluded anymore. But being deluded, they perceived that their big ahas about algebra were all that it took and that they were already there. Their mistake. Short span of time. Whereas the bodhisattvas of the earth understood that the path to true awakening, full awakening, uncompromised, or how does he call it here? Fully, completely awakened to the Buddha mind, the Buddha nature, is something vast and timeless. And only somebody who's awakened appropriately to the lotus of the Buddha, the lotus, the Myoho Renge Kyo, the actual experience of Buddha mind, Buddha-ness, could then perceive in an instant timelessness, which is far more vast than half a day. So does that make more sense? Miao Lo proceeds to comment on this by saying that the bodhisattvas who had freed themselves from ignorance were the awakened ones, and those who had not yet freed themselves from ignorance were the deluded ones. It is perfectly clear that this is what the above quotations mean. There are some scholars who say that some among the bodhisattvas taught by the Buddha in his transient status had attained the first stage of security or advanced beyond it in the course of bodhisattva practice and hence had already freed themselves from ignorance. They say so because they were taught that the various sutras that preceded the Lotus Sutra offer a means of attaining Buddhahood, when in fact, they do not offer any such means. Ouch. So there it is. People believing they've achieved something they haven't, simply because somebody told them they had. So without investigating the matter further, they stunt their own growth. And then Nichiren rails against that kind of thing all the time. He goes on to say, those who have received either the teaching prior to the Lotus Sutra or the theoretical teaching may in a certain sense attain the stage of perfect enlightenment. Perfect enlightenment is what I was looking for earlier. But when seen in terms of the true Buddha of the lifespan chapter of the essential teaching, such people are still in the company of the deluded or in the rank of worthy persons. The three bodies of the Buddha, as they appear in the provisional teachings, have not yet escaped from the realm of impermanence. And they are therefore, in effect, phantom Buddhas, such as one would see in a dream. As long as those who have received the teachings prior to the Lotus Sutra or the theoretical teaching of the Lotus Sutra have not yet received instruction in the essential teaching, they are to be described as people who have not yet extirpated illusion. But once they have received such a teaching, they qualify for the first stage of security. Miao Lo comments as follows, and, quote, when the Buddha proceeds beyond his transient status and reveals his true identity, all the listeners enter the first stage of security, end quote. This may be contrasted to what has been said above about such people being in the rank of worthy persons. People who have received the teachings prior to the Lotus Sutra, or the theoretical teachings of the Lotus, are in the category of the deluded. They are Buddhas and Bodhisattvas who have not yet freed themselves from ignorance. How true, how true. Therefore, we understand that once the lifespan chapter of the essential teaching had been revealed, all those in the assembly on Eagle Peak became enlightened to the lotus of the entity. Those of the two vehicles, the Ichantikas, or persons of incorrigible disbelief, and the determinate groups, as well as women and evil men, all gained an awakening to the lotus of the eternal Buddha, the eternal Buddha state. Not eternal because you're immortal. Not eternal because being a Buddha makes you immortal. See, to utter the word immortal is to indicate how incredibly glued we are to our human body. This isn't about self. This isn't about ego. This isn't about this body, or what religions like to refer to as a soul, like some kind of hefty trash bag full of you-ness. There is no such thing in Buddhism. So to use the word immortal is to say that you can never die, or that you continually exist, that you, Bob, Kathy, John, Sylvain, are permanent. That's as far from Buddhism as you can possibly get. So those interpretations of early Buddhist teachings that say that the idea of nirvana was immortality are incredibly egomaniacal, ignorant people who do not have the first clue about Buddhist teaching. It's absolutely not that. And it's not its opposite. It's not nihilism either, which a lot of Hinayana sects really took on and said, if we could just get rid of the self, we could be this enlightened thingness. And it's not about that. From the get-go, I mean, read the folklore about Siddhartha. You don't even have to study Buddhism per se. And it's right there in the beginnings of this whole teaching. And Siddhartha was looking for a way to for people to live without suffering. This life. Buddhism is a very pragmatic method for living this life at its maximum potential and living it well. It's not about leaving it. And it's not about making it immortal. It's just not. That's just way, way off the mark. And I hop on that because these translations are done by Westerners and they like to use their words, eternal. That shouldn't be here. I have to change that. So what we awaken to isn't the lotus of the eternal Buddha. We awaken to the lotus of Buddha. And that life state, that perceptive reality is without time. Not eternal, without time. Time is irrelevant to Buddha-ness. Probably harder to understand, or even to put in other words, but it's eternal, carries the baggage of thingness. It says this is always here. And we discuss in sutra after sutra after sutra that there is nothing that is always here. Impermanence, remember? One of the fundamental concepts of Buddhism. There's no eternalism in it. I have to take that out. That's very misleading. I hope I've made myself clear. Say something in the comments if you still don't understand what I'm talking about. I'll do a whole video about it. All right. The great teacher Dengyo, where are we time-wise? Yeah, we're running a little long. Let's see. I told you this is a meaty, meaty go show. All right, we've got three more paragraphs before the next question. I kind of feel like a question is a good point to take a break at, so I'm going to read the next three, and then we'll take a break. Okay? So, it goes on. The Nichiren continues. The great teacher Dengyo, explaining the lotus of the one great reason, end quote, why the Buddhas appear in the world, writes, quote, the one great matter, the heart and core of the Lotus Sutra, is the revelation of the lotus. The word one signifies that it is the one reality. The word great signifies that it is broad and all-encompassing in nature. And the word matter refers to the working of the essential nature of phenomena. All phenomena. This is one great reason for, quote, ultimate matter is the truth or the teaching, the wisdom, and the practice of the perfect teaching, or the Dharma body, the wisdom and the reward, the emancipation of the perfect teaching. Through this, the persons of the one vehicle, those of the three vehicles, those of the determinate groups, those of the indeterminate group, those who believe in Buddhist teachings, those who believe in non-Buddhist teachings, those who have no desire to become Buddhas, and those who are unable to believe in the correct teachings, all of these beings, every one of them, are brought to the realm of the wisdom penetrating all phenomena. Thus, this one great reason opens the door of Buddha wisdom to all beings, shows it, causes them to awaken to it, and induces them to enter into it, and all of them attain Buddhahood. Thus, we may say, this is Nichiren continuing, thus we may say that the so-called evil people, such as women, inchatikas, those of the determinate group, and persons of the two vehicles that all at Eagle Peak, now we're talking about the teaching in the Lotus Sutra, right? We're able to gain an awakening to the lotus of the entity of the wonderful and difficult to understand law. And now we move to the next question. So, how to summarize what we just read? Remember my analogy, and I think it was the last video I did, of the body of water, the pool, that you can hold a class of architecture and explain to future architects how to build a pool. You could talk to physics students and biology students and gosh, you name it, different disciplines, and teach them all about what is a pool, how is a pool, blah, 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 blah. But at some point, if you want to know what pool is, you just need to be in it. Then a lot of things come to you straight away. And it doesn't matter if you're a degreed architect, a doctor of biology, a physicist, with all of your understandings, disparate understandings of what pool is, you still haven't experienced it. Once you all jump in the pool, now you've all experienced it, and you can't unexperience it. It doesn't matter where you come from, what you come from, what level of study you've reached. The 7-year-old and the 70-year-old. Doesn't matter. Until you get in the pool, you're not going to know what it's like. But no matter what your differences are, once you get in the pool, all of you know pool. So that's what Nichiren is essentially saying. There's all these different levels of learning and teaching and experience of the Buddha teaching, but the pool is the Dharma. It is the experience of pool. Only then, no matter what your previous experience or thoughts, no matter how well indoctrinated or taught or learned you are, all of you, and this is the universality, the equanimity of Buddhism. When you enter the pool, no more doubt. You all know what pool is. So, the next question, should I tell you as a teaser? In our present age, the period of the latter day of the law, who has obtained the lotus of the entity? Incessant questioning. That's the wetter for the appetite. All right, that's long enough. Please help, if you can, support this podcast, this mission of mine. Support our Sangha, because all of us, I hope, get something out of these. If you don't have time to watch the videos, I have podcasts available all over the place called The Buddhahood Podcast. Find it. It's all free. I could try to charge something for all of these services and try to make some money that way, but I don't think that should be an obstacle to learning Buddhism. So I choose not to do it. I make it all free of charge. And I take the brunt of whatever it costs me to do this on my own. That's why, unfortunately, I ask for your support. Only unfortunate in that, it's unfortunate if that sounds like a condition for you to participate in this, because I don't want it to be. Your participation, become a member on Patreon or YouTube. Support this channel. Maybe if enough of you sign up, or you tell your friends to sign up. So, I don't know. It's hard with something like Buddhism to ask your friends to participate. But, that might be a way to introduce them to Buddhism. So, or at least answer a bunch of questions they may have about it. So, shoju practice, right? But if I can get enough people to trip the algorithm in YouTube, there's a chance I might be able to monetize this channel. But even then, I don't have any hopes of that being a great deal of money. We've seen a lot of YouTubers post their earnings from YouTube, and it's pretty meager. YouTube has become a very, in the early days, you can probably do a lot, but these days, it's just a way to disseminate information, and that's certainly how I use it. So, anyway, I will thank you for listening deeply. Appreciate our Sangha, and I'll see you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Take care of your health.